Support for this podcast comes from the patrons at patreon.com/FMLFPL.
Okay! Welcome to FMLFPL Milan!
Swalsh.
And just like that, the season's over. We're left with a couple dead bodies. We need to do a post-mortem. How are you feeling?
Just like that, fucking actual calendar year later.
Yeah, 350-something days of FPL season. Holy shit.
That was very long, obviously very long, and I'm happy to see it goodbye.
Yeah.
But, you know. Yeah, you know. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm ready to take some time off. I'm ready to...
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Play some video games on stream, play some video games off stream, do some other shit. But, actually, like, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we expect the game to reopen, so.
Should be about that, yeah.
See you then, bro. That's crazy. Do you want to talk about last week at all?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we could just glance over it. I had a monumental red arrow and free hit, unfortunately for me. But
49 pointer.
It's not exactly on the episodes of things you'll have to see, but 49 points just, you know, got a lot wrong. I mean, didn't get Spurs defense over Burnley defense wrong. One goal allowed against two goals allowed. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, you know, I just kind of tanked it. I went in on Mane and Mo and saw that leak come in, and I was just like, you know, bench feels fine. I don't know. It looked like such a banter team that it was kind of like unreal, even though it was somewhat of a credible like Twitter source, whatever. And you know, that didn't go great for me. I don't even know what I would have done otherwise. Like, I probably wouldn't have gotten points otherwise. Mane did score a goal, but
people did like Mo to Obs and a double change and stuff. I made the conscious decision to sleep through the leaks. I was just like, I'm not interested. I'm just this. I have nothing on the line, you know. Like, if I get plus or minus 10 points based off some fucking leak, like, I just don't care.
Yeah,
I don't want to stress out about it.
Yeah, I mean, if I was like 12K or something, and I was like very into like needing to do well in the last week, I would probably have made changes. But
yes.
As things were, and my bench. I mean, I got fucking like 30, 20 points off my bench or on my bench. They all stayed on my bench, so that's also why I felt.
Yeah.
That's also why I kind of felt okay. Like, maybe he's just gonna give him a total. It doesn't matter. This is already too long. Yeah, didn't do well. Dilv. Just El Mago didn't come in with the points. Yeah. Redders forgot that it was Game Week 38, thought it was Game Week 1, didn't come in with points. Wasn't great.
Alonso, our best pick.
Yeah, Marco Say, I mean, that was nice. What about you? How'd you go? What?
There were two cleans or three cleans?
Three
cleans.
There were
City,
Chelsea,
United, and Chelsea.
Yeah.
No one got that right, basically.
Yeah. I did have three cleans on my team. Just two of them were on the bench.
Yeah. I did about average, I think, 63. Yeah, about average. Still a nice fat red for me. My front line was good. Kane, Gale, and Jesus all came through. Gale pick. I had Mo with the one-pointer. Didn't slept through the leaks. Martinez, like, in terms of quality of saves, should have had, like, a 5 or 6-pointer, but he only made 4 saves and he got a yellow.
He deserved 1 point.
Yeah, I mean, Watford could have scored,
they should have won the game.
5?
Yeah.
Very easily, so whatever.
Four or five, yeah.
Yeah. But, whatever. 152K. Pretty bad. Pretty unhappy with it. But here we go. Housekeeping. So shout out to FML Field Prize League Mug League winner for July, last mug of the season, Jeff Dodds, Jeff D, legend, friend of the pod. What can you say? Mug couldn't be going to a better lad. Good job by you. And then shout out to the FML Field Pub League winner / the FPL winner overall, worldwide winner, Alexander Antonov. I've been saying every week, he just like keeps climbing his world OR. He was like 3 and then whatever. Caps Kev, Final Day Hall, what a monster. And then Alex, along with Alex Coates, Malte Wanderskog, Thomas New, Alex Nielsen, made up the top five in our public league, which made us the fourth highest league in the entire game on the front page. So I don't know. That's never happened, I guess. Good job by you. Good job by us, I guess.
That's not a good job by us. We didn't do anything.
Hey, yeah. Our name is on the fucking title. Yeah.
It's like the Stanley Cup. We're like the trainer. We're like the 38th name written on
not
the
even. We're like Goldman Sachs, like sponsoring the stadium or something. We're like, yes, world champions, baby. But yeah, all right, going on. So I don't know where to begin. I think you know better than me where to begin. This is kind of your bread and butter.
Yeah, I mean, I love a recap and a preview. I don't like the bits in between. I'm the bun. I like the bun. I don't like the in between. Basically,
you don't like the hot dog. You just want the fucking bun.
Yes. So, I think you know a lot of the kind of postseason pods are sort of like the recap of like, oh, my team, like I got captain points and my vice captain's got more points and I got the most points out of Kevin. Like, yo, great. Like, should have had them all. You know. No one obviously cares about my team or your team, but I think what I tried to do to kind of look or research for the pod were some like players, themes, like teams and takeaways from what happened this year, trying to like distill it down to what it represented of like, what is that player? Like, who is that player? What kind of bracket does, what price bracket or what skill set? And then thinking about projecting it into next year, just like a lesson to be learned from it. So, you know, have like a handful here, and I think maybe we'll just go with that, and then we'll take questions afterwards.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so, I'm on board.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the first place to start is Kevin.
Kevin.
So, I mean, the thing that was really interesting about Kevin this year was he started the season at 9-5. And, you know, last year was a lost year, kind of, right? Like, he had 59 fantasy points, and 9-5 he came in this year was the lowest he's ever been. He's always been 10-10-5. But he's, like, the kind of player who's on an elite team, an elite player with, you know, he's a heavy hitter. And he came in underpriced.
In hindsight, like, ridiculous underpricing by them.
Like they well, just, I think it,
he was injured. That was the only thing that happened last season that made him underpriced, right? Like, that's bizarre.
Well, I think that the 2 years before, he was like right on 200 on the nose, and they priced him at 10 and 10.5, which was, and he finished up like right at that same starting price. Like, his finishing price was the same. So like, that was about what players wanted to pay for him, right? Like, that's a good metric to see what they start at. So I think they just baked in a little bit of a discount in case he was injured again. But at 9-5, like, we're like, okay, you're looking at a 0.5, maybe a 1 million savings. And he was in some teams game week before game week one, but not like that many. And I think by around game week three, game week four, everyone had him. So I think, and then, you know, he went on to just crush and have 250 and, you know, most goals he's ever had by a lot, by 5, 13 goals, 23 assists. You know, he's just a good player. But I think with him, and we've seen this like with Ozil, right? He was really cheap and he went the other way, right? He was just awful.
Yep.
But when you have someone who is perennially or historically really good and really proven, and he's not like an old piece of shit or something, that's something that we should take notice of. Like, that should be a short list of players that we write down when we look at the prices in game week one. Like, okay, these six players have returned at a premium level, but are a little bit underpriced for whatever reasons, like last year or 2 years ago. So it's like that's sort of what I saw.
And when Erickson was like 8-5 or whatever.
Yeah,
like, there wasn't he 8-5 or 9, like, two seasons in a row or something? And he was right there too, like, same, like, finish, around finishes Kev, like, around 200 or whatever, is that kind of player.
Yeah, yeah, he's been around 9. I mean, not so, but just in general, like, with Kevin, is like, this is what I'm saying. Okay, let's look at Kevin. Yeah, okay, he was great, obviously. But he was, like, an underpriced heavy hitter. And, like, identifying them preseason helps you jump on them early if they're firing. Because, you know, if you're stubborn and you didn't get him till game week 7, that's, you know, 40K places, because he was just doing it every year, right?
Yeah, and a lot
every week.
And a lot of value, which, you know, we usually don't give a shit about, but when it's like very early season and he's already 0.5 more expensive by the time it's game week 8. Like, that's pretty significant. That's yeah. a lot. That's a giant price hike. But so how do we, the thing is, like, we're based, what you're saying is basically like we need to find like almost a loophole, right? Like, we're looking for FPL towers to underprice someone.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, right. So who are even the candidates? Who are we thinking?
For next year?
Yeah, for like an underpriced heavy hitter. That, I feel like it's rare, but maybe I'm not looking hard enough.
I don't think it's that rare. I think it's just like Kuhn could be that player next year, right? Like, he played under 1,500 minutes, 132 points. When he plays, he should be around 12. Like, he could come in next year at 10-5, 11.
Yeah.
It's not a huge discount, but, well, you know,
kind of is.
He could be like a million less than he should be. Like, that's the kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Certainly there aren't going to be many players in this bucket. But, you know, I think it's just something like we don't realize, or maybe we don't think about it because we have so much of like the end of last season in our heads. But yeah. just thinking about maybe like Ollie, right? Ollie's a really good example of this. He had 14 returns this year. He started out at 8.5. He's pretty much always 8.5. But when he's playing support striker, when he's right, like it's been a few years, right? He's
yeah,
had like a few down
yeah.
years. But I mean, 15, 16, 16, 17, he was having like 20, 30 returns. And, you know, he's a premium player.
He could come in at
8 next year. And, you know, not necessarily starting with him game week one, but just being mindful of that. Like, he could explode, and that could be like where you capitalize.
Yeah, Spurs in general are probably all good examples of this. If you think about
yeah.
just that, where their totals ended up in relative to their prices, like Kane didn't match his starting price this season. He finished with 150. Son didn't match his price this season, you know? So maybe yeah. they all kind of go 0.5 under or something like that. But yeah, I think that's good. We should be sounding the alarms more when we see those kind of guys.
Yeah. I think it's important not to be like, we should put them all on our game week one teams. Like, that doesn't make sense. But just to at least note them. Like, these six players seem like they're underpriced. And, okay, they have bad fixtures or whatever reasons that we don't want them on the game week one teams. But just, like, they're on that, like, short list. Like, if they start playing well, like, they're early like, if we're early adopters on them, we could do well with them. So,
right. Yeah, I brought Kevin game week 4. So,
We were both early on him. Yeah.
Yeah, we were close.
Yeah.
The weeks I owned Kev, he averaged 5.5 points. And the weeks I didn't own Kev, he averaged 11.3 points.
You're
Is
good.
Is that good?
Yeah, you're good. No, you're good.
God, he was such a nightmare. Hate him.
He wasn't a nightmare. He was so
fucking
good.
Fucking hate him. Yeah, only for me.
You're a nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah, only for me. I had him the most out of game weeks of any player. And there were still that discrepancy in points.
And you had him still 20, horrible at owning
28
him.
Game weeks.
Yeah. The 10 you didn't, he had 100 points.
Actual. Over 100.
Yeah.
Woo! All right, what's next?
Is this, was that like good? Is that,
I like
that kind of,
that's a good thing. Yeah, yeah, that's a good thing.
On.
And this
be
is
honest,
the type of pod.
Be honest.
It was good.
All right.
This is the type of pod that I plan on listening to before the preseason pods. That's like yeah. how I milk the most out of this.
Yeah. I'll listen and then ignore all of the things we talk about.
This is how I win.
So Trent, right? Trent's next year.
He's good.
He's a good player. Good player. he had like 50,000 returns. Started at 7, finished up at 7.7. I think the takeaway with Trent is that we need to, as a community, like fundamentally reevaluate how we view the position of defense and what we feel comfortable paying for defenders. I think last season or this season, like at the beginning of last season, we had the inkling of this where we were talking about like Dean was getting a lot of attacking stats.
Yeah.
Trent Robbo as well 2 years ago, and it came through again this year. They both like were right around 200 points. Doc, exactly, right? We historically as FPL managers, like in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, we're like 4 or 5 cheapest route in. That's all we wanted to do. We try and cheapest route to the clean sheet, but teams evolve and we're seeing so many players, defenders that are not only wingbacks, like Trent wasn't a wingback, but he was effectively out of position in every game he played. And I think we need to just think a little bit broader of formation and what we feel comfortable paying on defenders. We have no problem paying 7.5 for a kind of punty, like worst midfielder on Chelsea or something.
Or like but a midfielder on fucking like Bournemouth even. Yeah. You know, like a shitty team midfielder.
Yeah, Phrase 7.5. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, clean sheet is almost more bankable and predictable than an assist or a goal from like the 9th place team's midfielder of choice.
Right.
So I think we should just start thinking more about spending more in defense. Like that's, there are so many out of position defenders that are just creating just as many chances. A lot of creative midfielders, you know, with the clean sheets. I think that's like, that was my like Trent takeaway.
Yeah. The weird thing about just mids and forwards in general, it's like there's such, especially mids, and you just look at the top scorers, like there's such a fall off. There's 5 guys at 200. Mahrez, he had a lot of points, but he was kind of a disaster in and out for a lot of the season. Then you look at Sun, missed portions of the season. Spurs were kind of a disaster for parts of the season. Like going down the list, it just gets worse and worse very, very quickly. Willian really kicked on like after Project Restart, not really before that. Richarlison also, and Everton in general, had a really bad chunk of the season. Grealish is next at 150. Like the fall, it just falls directly off. And then, but defenders, yeah, I mean, for the price you're paying, you're getting so much more return.
Yeah, usually. I think that the main difference, like looking at it in that way, though, is with the midfielders, by game week, like 8, we all have 3 of the same midfielders, kind of, you know? So that's the one thing. With defenders, you have a lot more variability with who you have and who other teams are going to have. So I feel like you almost have more chance to gain points on the field if you're kind of accurately picking your defenders versus, you know, everyone has Mo and Kevin and then one of like Mane and Raz or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The thing also with defenders, though, is like, yeah, I agree with you. And we were kind of, was it last season where we were like ahead of the curve being big at the back? Or was that 2 seasons ago? Whatever it was. I blend everything together, but the thing that I'm also thinking about defenders is like we need to stop spending our transfers on defenders and goalkeepers, especially goalkeepers.
That's a big thing.
Because
so bad.
Yeah, I mean we're picking defenders from like the top 8 teams usually, right? Like we don't really go below that. They're capable of cleaning any game. It's actually not predictable. You know, like you get like a Wolves defender, like they could clean Manchester City out of nowhere. It just happens sometimes. And you just basically want to start them every week when you're getting an attacking defender because, like you said, like they're surpassing the midfielders in points anyway. They're putting up comparable goal plus assist tallies anyway. So you want to start them every week. The amount of transfers that you and I specifically make in our like back 5.
I don't want to think about it.
It's unbelievable. So it's compared unreal. To the other managers who just unreal. Like hold like hope for 30 game weeks. Me and you,
it's unreal.
Yeah,
unreal.
It's like your goalkeeper with the most game weeks is Schmeichs with 13. Mine's Ederson with 13.
It's not where you
like,
want to be.
Like we should have one guy with 30 and then our wild card and have a different guy for 8. Like, that should be our thing next season.
I've never done that before.
No, I know.
So bad.
Because they're bad. It feels bad. So I got to get rid of this guy. And, like, that's ridiculous. Like, we're just spinning the wheels, right? Spinning fucking dicks. It's horrible. It pisses me off. I look at this shit, and I'm just like, why are my highest defenders Soy 17 game weeks, VVD 16 game weeks, Lundy 15 game weeks? Like, why isn't it Trent 30, VVD 30, and like, you know, then Lundy 15 or whatever? You know, it's ridiculous. I'm spending all so much time rotating in and out defenders when I'm already picking defenders from the top teams. They can clean any week. VVD didn't miss a single minute all season. Actual played 90 minutes for 38 straight games. Why didn't I just have him? I should have just kept him. He's really good. He gets a lot of points.
That would have been smart.
Transfers are worth a lot more than fucking swapping out VVD and Trent and Soy and whatever the fuck. It's just like, yeah, I mean, I agree with your defender take, and then I take it one step further where I'm just like, yeah, and we have to just hold our guys almost. Like,
well, the thing that makes that really challenging, though, is that you have to get it right away. Like, you have to make a read, and you have to hope that sticks, because we do see defenses. So next, we could transition from this to next point. Sheffield United defense this season, right? Like, that insane. That was a big thing this year. And this was similar to kind of, I was thinking of like Wolves defense last season.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
a promoted team. Wolves defense, they didn't keep as many cleans, but their underlying stats were about the same.
Right. And Sheffield they're picking United up wins and stuff in a similar way where we knew they were a good team. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we see something like Sheffield United defense. Like, it wasn't like Lundstrom's playing out of position, whatever, but it didn't take that long to see that they were grinding out like win to nils, like a lot in the beginning of the season. So, every year, like, there's a defense or a couple teams whose defenses look good, like tight, you know, have a couple good players. And they had four defenders in the top, like, eight in points. Crazy. Egan, Baldock, Stevens, Lundstrom. Figuring out that defense and investing in it early and holding is like a really big thing to do. And I think that's like really hard, but it just got me thinking of like, how do we take what we saw from Sheffield United defense this season and apply it next season? Like, do we look at, you know, maybe, I don't know, Newcastle maybe that's an early goes wild back. Card. Is that an early wild card take, you think?
It might be.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
Say
that,
more. Go ahead.
It just seems like the sort of thing where... I mean, we talked about this on last year's postmortem, but we didn't really do it, where early wildcard... You and I usually think about wildcard as changing up the premium positions or major surgery because we have, like, red cards and injuries and suspensions and stuff. Whereas last year, postmortem, we were talking about maybe actually the best time to wildcard is like holding our long-term guys because they're really good on the best teams and figuring out all the fringes. Like making seven other moves to get like, okay, triple Sheffield at the back plus Doc to our, you know, Liverpool guys that we're just keeping all season. And, you know, a couple glue guys in midfield and forward alongside like Kuhn and Kev and Salah or something. That seems like a more worthwhile wild card to me because the premium guys, it's easy to bounce around, right? And furthermore, that's where we want to use our transfers, right? We don't want to be using transfers on, you know, fucking Iose Perez to the next.
That's on defense, and that's where I want to spend my transfers.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, I want to be swapping, like, Iose Perez to fucking, you know, dick fuck now on some other bad team, you know? Like, that's... Yep. That's where we end up spending all our transfers, and we don't get any points from either guy. Just either side. It's just
so
bad.
Fun, though.
It's like, it's, we, so yo, fun. It's so fun, which is why we fall into it. It's like candy to us. Like, we just are like, oh my God. It's like, we see it as like an opportunity, you know?
Gaston Ramirez. Do you realize how low Gaston Ramirez is on? We could own him.
He's only 5'5".
We got to get him. I mean, he's under 1%.
Like, we look at a team like Brighton and the Seaweed, and we're just like, yes, I finally have the opportunity to get this guy, this horrible guy on a bad team. This is, like, great. I can't wait to transfer out Iose Perez to get some other horrible guy. Whereas we should just be finding our fucking version of, like, whatever, some cheap guy we can just hold all season and be bouncing around from, like, Raz, Mane, Mo, Kev, Kuhn, Kane, Obbs. When they have their good runs and do that, be cool like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to look at it, for sure.
Postmortem is such a rant pod. It's just like...
It's good stuff. Because, I mean, you know, I could easily spend 5 minutes talking about, okay, well, if you have OBS, you don't know where the points are coming. You know, he's going to get 200+. Like, you know, you just hold them. You know, whatever. But, blah, 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 check this out. when we see the team, like the defense that surprises us, though, like this is something, the second part of this that was interesting to me in thinking about is how heavily do you invest? Like when you see Sheffield United this season, say you identify them, they're like sort of middling to elite defensive stats. They've been good. Like, do you go whole hog or is it still something that you want to sprinkle? Like how many shares kind of a thing? What do you feel about that?
A lot of leaning back this episode and just thinking
because like
about
last
stuff.
Year, right, with Wolves was yeah. exact. We did this exact thing with Wolves last year, and I had
we
like
both
Bennett,
like tripled up. I think,
yeah, and I think I got one clean in like 7 weeks. Like they gave up one goal every game. Yeah, do you remember that? I was like apoplectic, couldn't handle it.
Vividly
it was a
remember
fucking
it.
Nightmare every game. It was a nightmare. I could not
wild.
Take it.
It was
but
wild.
That. But I was like, okay, like this team, I think they're a really good defense. So I got three of them, and
cheap,
it was awful.
Right?
Cheap, cheap. That's the biggest thing. They're cheap. I mean, we're not talking about like fucking City. Like, oh yeah, they're keeping clean. But with a team like like Sheffield United, where they're all 4 or 5 or 4 or 5, right?
Oh man, we're such a nightmare. Basically, we're saying, yeah, in hindsight, just jump on the best team and don't jump on the bad team who keeps no cleans. Like,
no, but it's the thing with this is because, like, okay, we had Lundstrom, right? We honed him the whole time, like, cool, but, like, everyone had him. So,
yeah.
Do you get ahead by just doing that and not putting too many shares, or do you put 2 or 3 feet in the water, 2 feet in, in the arm?
What the fuck are you talking about?
I was talking about doubling or tripling.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, yeah.
I don't
but
know
we don't
what
have
to
three
say.
Legs. We don't have 3 feet.
I don't know what to
two
say.
2 feet and 1 leg.
Yeah, just go all in, I guess. Go whole hog. I don't know what the fuck to say. Like, what's... Okay, I guess, what is the downside of going whole hog? It's that you end up with your situation with Wolves, right?
Yeah.
And they're
yes.
just a nightmare.
Yes.
But in the
no,
scenario...
No, but it's like... Yeah.
No, but
they're
the
still
scenario
good,
that I'm
but they still
talking
concede.
About is that when... We do go whole hog, but alongside our mainstays.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's not as bad, right?
Yeah, because like, you say, get points from the other guys.
Yeah,
right?
You go triple chef you. Lundy eventually gets dropped as a nightmare. He's on your bench, whatever. But you still have Trent Robbo. It's like your defense as a whole is fine. And you're still doing... You're not spending
yeah,
transfers
what are you,
in defense.
Playing 5 at the back there, though, or something?
I don't know. 4?
All right.
4-2 or something?
No, I see what you're saying.
Right? You get like Hendo, Lundy... Egan. That's what you wild card in game week 5 wild card or something.
So forget, but forget
Trent
about
Robbo.
The content. Talk about the process. Like forget about the so you like getting like you like looking at and saying, okay, this defense is good. I'm gonna get a bunch and maybe I don't start them all every week, but you wanna have as many shares as you can if you think rather than diversifying. Because a lot of people do that, right? A lot of people don't want two. They want one from here, one from here, one from here, so that they can
yeah,
keep
I mean,
their...
that's like the normal strategy, right? Or yeah. figure out a rotation. But we found, I feel like, in the past, that rotation based on cleans, like, isn't that effective? Because the bad teams are just really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I never. My problem with postmortem is I never feel confident enough in all of these theories. They're just, like, theories. If that makes sense.
We change every fucking month. Like, I don't feel confident about any of it. It's just thinking... I mean,
it's like we're just throwing ideas out there.
Yeah.
And then we have to... That's why I want to listen before the preseason, because I want to be like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that
this
idea.
Makes
that's
sense
cool.
This was the, but,
yeah, exactly.
But that's the point of this, is to come up with, like, what are we trying to learn from the
right,
season? It's not to just reflect and recap, like,
right.
oh... Mo's really good. He did it again. Like, great.
Yeah,
like, oh,
yeah.
I should captain right. Like, okay, cool, dude. Like, it's to think about these types of, like, macro or these, like, theory things, right? And to...
Yes.
Obviously, we're not talking about, like, oh, we're right. Like, I'm fucking dumb and wrong about pretty much everything here, I think. But just to get everyone, like, thinking about these topics,
yeah.
right? Just thinking
that's
about the strategy. That's all. That's what we're doing. That's
we're
doing
a
here.
Good job of that, I think.
Okay. So let's go to Ings next. So Ings...
What a
obvious,
miss.
Obvious miss for both of us here this
huge.
Year in FMLFPL land, but basically like distilling Ings into what kind of a player does he represent? Always has had the skills, but never able to put it together, you know, injury prone. he's only had 1 year before this year that he came close to 3,000 minutes was in 2014. I mean, we were like fucking basically in college then. Well, not really, but whatever.
Not really.
Long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that injury prone player that like finally does it, finally puts the pieces together and puts in a lot of points. Injury prone players, like, it doesn't or does it make sense to apply a rule for players that are injury prone? Like, the more I thought about this, the less I thought it made sense to shy away from them, because they're always just, we get 38 transfers, right? They're always one transfer away from just someone else in that price bracket. So if the player has the skills, I feel like we should almost throw their injury history completely out the window and look at them more just for evaluating. Like, they're healthy now. We get a transfer every week. And if in the best case scenario they don't get injured, then we're flying, right? Like, we're so happy. And if they do get injured, then we just spend a transfer. But to not pick a player who has good skills, like good underlying stats, good skills, good eye test, because we think they might get injured because they have done in the last few years, doesn't really seem to make sense on like this small 1 year game, like this little micro game that we play. So that was what I took from Ings. What do you think about that?
Yeah, while you were talking, I was thinking, actually, injury prone guys are kind of, we should almost like search for them, because they're the type that are going to be underpriced, like the first thing that we talked about. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, they're, like Kuhn, like you brought up Kuhn as an example of someone who might be underpriced. He's also someone who's injury prone. Like, we're never scared of getting Kuhn, because it's like, when he's fit, he can hat trick in any game, so we just get him. That's great. But like, yeah, I mean, that maybe that is a good source of like guys who were, I mean, that's why Kevin was underpriced this year, right?
Yeah.
Came off a summer injury. So maybe that is a sneaky way to get someone for value, get someone who's underpriced. Yeah.
And I think also with that is, I mean, we started off this season, and I think from last season, we were kind of like, the value of a transfer is very high.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm like on the other side there. Like, I don't feel like the value of a transfer is very high anymore, because hitting the explosive like hits is what gets you chunk rises. And finding 4 points, like, you're not going to do well if you're not aggressively searching for the hat tricks or the braces. And, you know, spending 4 points here and there, or using your transfers to go from, you know, if you get Ings, you go for it, and he gets hurt, and then you get, you know, DCL instead. Like, okay. But, you know, the transfers, right, we're looking for the upside and for the big point holes. So I feel like using transfers and taking hits, I'm like getting back around to almost like my roots of when I did take a lot of more hits almost.
That's like the main thing in my today mentally prepping for this pod that I thought of also. I used to be good at FPL. I used to just trust my gut, rip my team apart, take so many hits, like cap who my gut says is the best guy, not cap the obvious guy or whatever. And I used to be, you know, have pretty good ranks, actually pretty good. And then like I look at this season, especially last season was my worst ever. And I'm just like, God, I'm such a fucking pussy. Like, I just don't do the things that I think all the time. Like, this, finally I got Gale in my free hit, and I'm like, great. But I've been shouting him for a while, and he just was scoring points. Like, I didn't get him. Like, how many people in Slack, like Reddit, wherever the fuck, like, we're talking like top 200 people in the fucking world are like, oh my God, thanks so much for the pod, like your shouts. And I'm like, what the hell? Twilight Zone nightmare am I in, where me and you are having just disasters and everyone else in the world is thanking us for our good shouts. I'm like, what is happening? We're not trusting ourselves at all. Low confidence, not gut feels. Like,
I think part of our problem with that is that we, like this season, right, we started game week one, we both had Ashley Maitland-Niles, and we both had Soy Boy. Amazing. They were both under 1% at great that time. Calls. Like, no one was talking about either, and they both had, like, they were both, I mean, Ashley was good for a little while, they got a lot of points for us, and Soy Boy was a mainstay for the whole year. We don't consistently, like, we do that. We, like, dip our toe into that, but then we also play the template game.
Yeah, yeah. That's where we get into trouble. We try and do both, and we end up doing neither. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So that's our problem. But we have a lot of problems. That's one of the problems.
We have a lot of problems.
So many problems. Too many problems for one
Too many problems, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, you know, hits. Yeah. I think, yeah, maybe next year
that's what you were talking about. But, yeah, the only, like, counterpoint that I wanted to make on the value of a transfer thing is that, like, that goes hand-in-hand very nicely with my idea of not using transfers on keepers and defenders.
Yeah.
Because imagine how many more good, aggressive transfers we would have used if we just kept Soy all year.
Yeah.
Like, why'd we get rid? He's cheap as fuck. He's on a top 16. Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah, we, like, wildcard. We're like, oh, we, like, gain 0.1 value. Like, we're so smart. Let's
just
get rid.
Just keep him. It's pointless. Yeah. It's actually pointless. And then we could have been making more aggressive moves. We wouldn't have helped fucking Pookie for 10 game weeks if we just had an extra transfer because we didn't transfer our goalkeepers.
Yeah.
I don't know. We fucking suck.
So, speaking of Pookie, next player here. Early flash in the pan. So what we do with him, right?
What'd we do?
We ignored his overperforming of very, very bad underlying stats.
Yeah.
Like, he's finishing at a rate that is, like, better than Messi. And we saw a couple of good performances from Norwich early doors where we think, like, okay, like, they're going to be open, they're going to be scoring goals. I mean, granted, he had a billion points in the first five game weeks.
Yeah, that's like an addendum, right? It's got a lot of points out of him, but then we kept him too long.
That's the thing. I think that's what I'm talking about. So we see that you're like, okay, price is rising, bandwagon's coming. Like, maybe Norwich is going to be good this year. Okay, you buy him. Game week 6, Burnley, 2-pointer. He doesn't score a goal until game week 14. How do you evaluate, like, that player who's on a team who, like, preseason was not supposed to be good? Had a few good performances, has some good points, and then you're in the middle of, like, second or third blank, and the team's starting to falter a little bit. You know, what do you think, like, how do you think we could figure this out for next time?
I wish I knew. I don't know. I mean, because, all right, well, it's really hard to remember, like, eye test, but you can look at stats, and, like, his shots started going way down. That was definitely a sign of
the shots were down the whole time, though. That's the thing.
No, but he had 3 shots against Liverpool. That's incredible. Then he had 7 shots against Newcastle, 2 versus Chelsea. It's Chelsea. 2 versus West Ham, 3 versus City. It's City. 4 versus Burnley. Okay. You know, right, like, those are good. But then it's 1-2-2-2-2 after that.
Yeah,
which is really bad. Even if your XG is high and you're not getting a lot of shots, it's bad.
They're not going to get points.
But it's hard for me to remember, but I feel like the eye test, he was still really good. I just don't remember. Like, they lost 2-0 to Burnley, but he had 4 shots and 0.4 XG. And I
remember that we were holding because of the fixtures, not because of the eye test.
Probably. Because he probably transitioned into that, I think.
Yeah, because he had, like, that. He blanked Burnley, Palace, Villa, Bournemouth, Brighton, Watford. Like, we're looking at those like, oh my God, he's going to get so many
points.
Hold
him for one more, right?
Yeah. It was like, oh, the next game, right? It's going to be the next game. But they were bad. Like, the team was bad. They weren't scoring. They weren't creating chances, and
his numbers were awful in Palace, Villa, Bournemouth successive games. He numbers were terrible, and we just ignored it.
So, like, I feel like I think that this kind of thing with Pookie is, like, it's really important after the season starts to remember a preseason and be like, okay, any team can put a few good games together, but before the season, when everyone's looking at everything on paper and they're like, this team's bad, they're going to be bad, that's probably going to happen.
Right.
So I feel like when you have a player on that team who's like a bandwagon or a flash in the pan, that we should remember that and keep them on a really short leash. And if you see a couple bad performances, regardless of the fixtures that are coming up, doesn't matter. Like, as was proven very quickly, there were literally no good fixtures. The best fixture for Norwich is like Luton Town that they're going to get to play next year. They had no good fixtures this year. They were fucking bad.
I think
they
you're right.
Relegated by a million points. So like, that's something that I was thinking about.
This is totally niche, but do you remember the site Football Outsiders? No. NFL stats site?
No.
They've been doing like advanced sabermetrics NFL shit for a long ass time. They do. When they rank teams, like say they'll rank a team's offense, they'll rank a team's defense, like whatever, they do heavily weighted that gradually dissipates through the season. Right? So early doors is exactly what you're saying. It's weighted heavily off of like last season and preseason projections, early season. So they don't get tricked into thinking that someone like Norwich is, oh my God, they're actually good. No. They're not actually good yet. Because it's weighted, you know, some percentage weighted, they're maybe not going to get relegated is like where we should have been at, right? Because preseason's like they're definitely getting relegated. Then they come out hot. It shouldn't go to like they're maybe good, which is where we go. It should go to maybe they are the 16th best team in the league. And then like if you take that into consideration, then they drop all those points against all those really bad teams. It's like, no. They're going to get relegated. They're really bad,
like we expected this.
We need to have that weighted factor in our head is basically what I'm trying to say. Yeah. I think you're right on there. I think that's a good way to think about it and avoid it.
But what do you think about just jumping on the bandwagon? Like, I still feel like you got to go for it when it presents itself, right?
Yeah, I mean, we got those initial hauls out of him. You know, like, that was good. The thing we did was just hold him for like 10 more game weeks, and that was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Not 10, but like 8 maybe. But yeah, I think we were also getting rid of bad guys at the time, I think. And so, you know, it all worked out fine, but
yeah,
bandwagons in FPL are just, it's important and dangerous. I don't know.
Yeah.
Form bites us again.
So next guy I had was Jim. So kind of that guy who's just not sexy, right? He had a price hike. He wasn't on a lot of teams, but it still ended up being not enough of a price hike.
Yep.
So, you know, he started at 7.5. He'll probably be around 8.5, 9 next year, I would guess.
Yeah, has to be, yeah.
That type of player who's just not flashy, who, you know, you're never going to captain, but... You know, you could hold for a long time with like a low ceiling, high floor. Just like they accumulate, like you speculate to accumulate. Like he plays every game. He is over 3,000 minutes. He starts absolutely every game. He missed like I think he's one game off the bench. Those players are really valuable in FPL, and it's hard to hold and bat. Like I think Rich is another like kind of guy like this, who's just. At this point, I still feel like he's going to have an explode. Like I was pretty big on him, I think, preseason. I thought he was maybe a 20 goal. He's going to do that. But he's at this point, after the last 2 years of like very similar years and points, very steady. Like he earns his price, you know, like that kind of player who's going to earn his price.
Yeah.
Maybe a little surplus value, you know, Rich or not. I'm Jim. Like
we're talking about marriage material here. I mean, these guys are perennially. We overlook them because we like the Gumars and we get attracted to the new blood. But like, you want to marry these guys? They glue your team together. You need these guys so you can use your transfers on the other guys.
Yeah. So I think it's just those types of players who are not getting a lot of hype in the community. I think Vardy also is like a little bit similar to this. He had those couple months of red hot form. So he had, you know, 1,000 points this year. He somehow topped the forwards and the points, but like he was very unheralded. He was in no teams preseason. They had a few tough fixtures opening doors and he ended up, you know, again, those couple months in the fall entering winter where he was just scoring every game. He couldn't stop scoring, but you know, that he's never going to be a sexy pick. He's always going to be just like, oh God, like, okay, fine, we could do this again. But those players just do, you know, give you really good seasons. So I think, you know, it's even if the community is not like big on them or whatever, they're still good picks.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I've come around on that.
And I think that's like a Bob for next year.
Hopefully. Oh my God. If he drops in price, that would be so good. What did he start the season? 9-5?
Yeah. I mean, he's got to be A5
next year. Yeah, no goals. He scored no goals. Yeah,
he has to be A5 next year.
Please.
That's all I got.
Great point.
Oh, no, actually, I have one more thing.
Okay.
Not a player. So this actually came out of every midfielder walking into Everton's midfield. I think after the restart, and I think honestly it came from just watching like so many more games, I found myself analyzing a lot more based on the team performances than individual players. Mm. And I was trying to kind of, in the past, I would never do that. I would always look at players first, right? I would always look at like who's getting those shots in the box, like who do I want? Who's the best midfielder, whatever. But looking at the team performances and looking at just what's going on with the teams, I feel like is a lot more predictive, or, you know, you can project into the future a lot more when you feel confident that, okay, this is what Spurs are doing. This is what I've seen them doing for the last few games. I expect them to do this for the next 10 games.
Yes.
Rather than like, oh, Son's getting a lot of shots in the box. Like, I'm going to get him.
Mm.
You know, looking at it in the context of the team and what the plan is and what they're doing, I feel like that's something that I definitely have not thought of before. That seemed like there was something there of looking at the team performances over the individual. What do you think about that?
I have like a follow-up, additional thing that I actually thought about today and you just reminded me of, which is, I guess like Kane is like the good example maybe of this happening. I'm sure there's plenty of examples in the other direction, but I agree with you on the team performance. The other thing that we, I think, put too much stock in, and other people maybe ignore us or get lucky or whatever, or they're more patient, is that like when a team is playing like a complete shithouse nightmare and like losing games and dropping points, me and you are the first ones to call them out on that and be like I'm Leicester. Going, yeah, Leicester, Everton, Spurs, like I'm going nowhere near them, right? Like they are a disaster. What we don't ever factor in is that the managers and coaching staff also see what's happening and might change things. And in the case of Spurs, I mean, yeah, like they barely 1-0 Everton. They got done by Sheffield United. They barely 1-0 Everton. They have the worst match ever against Bournemouth. And then they win 2-1, 3-1, 3-0 and draw Palace, and their players get tons of points. Here I am ripping Son out of my team, telling other people to rip Son out of their team, rip Kane out of your team, and blah, 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 and they end the season with a flurry of points. I don't know how dependable that is of a thing, but I just feel like I should be aware of like, okay, well, Mourinho definitely sees what we see, that this is a fucking nightmare, and they're the worst team in the league right now, you know, and like, they change shit and get stuff going and change up the personnel and try stuff. And, you know, like, you know, the shittiest teams in the league, like Norwich, whatever, they're incapable of doing that. And Farke isn't changing. And Dean Smith isn't changing. And, like, the personnel doesn't matter who they bring in. They suck. But, like, maybe those top teams, we sometimes put too much in, like, the most recent two or three matches without giving them credit of, like, yeah, well, they can get out of it because they're good. You know?
Yeah, no, that's fair. That makes sense.
Yeah. All right, nice.
That's all I got.
You did great. And then you carried us to like 50 minutes already, so that's great. All right, let's do some questions. Al, biggest fuck up of the season.
What? Is that the question?
That's the question. Biggest fuck up of your season with a question mark.
Made a team game week one.
Yeah, I mean, I never know how to answer these questions. We've probably talked about our biggest fuck ups in the things we just talked about, right? Like, I'm talking about what I'm talking about, you know?
I don't care.
It was the week I didn't get Raz when he was our unquestioned best captain and ended up hat-tricking, and I got like Vardy. And that was just horrible. But I don't know. It's too hard to think about.
So many things.
Chucky, what traps did you fall in this season and how do you reflect on them? I mean, we talked about the traps, right? I think we talked about Pookie. I think we talked about goalkeepers. I think we talked about shitty budget midfielders on bad teams. Are there other traps?
I still also feel like I lost a lot of points just like hopping between premiums, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I started with like Aubs. I got rid of him after he was just returning every game week like a fucking idiot. and he kept doing it, you know? I mean, that kind of thing. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Mane and Mo, like, I feel like I spent a lot of transfers, both one or the other, and like that didn't go great.
Yeah.
You know, Man City also, like, I had Kevin the whole time, but like, you know, going between like Raz or, you know, Get Kun or what am I doing with my City spots? I don't know. I was pretty bad this year, dude. I mean, I was pretty off.
You had your worst season by so much.
I mean, I wrote it off after the restart. I was already so bad that I was just like doing fun stuff. But I was just misidentifying pretty much everything, honestly.
You had your worst season by 350,000 places.
Yeah. Not good for me. Not good for Team Walsh.
I think that was your biggest trap. Some question about next season. Chuck said, do you think Walsh has already ruined Ziyech for FPL next year, or will it take a while for his love of him to take root? And then Callum's follow-up is, what do we do with Chelsea attack next season? Clearly one of the best attacks in the league, but Fat Frank will have a lot of options, not always certain who's going to play.
Well, what's the problem with me having Ziyech for the whole year?
I think he's saying, like, did you curse him already? Oh, did you kiss of death him?
No, he's so good, dude.
He can go beyond.
Yeah. There's needs way more than just me to ruin him. He's so good. It's ridiculous.
I don't really want to even talk about Callum's question. That's like a preseason question to me.
That is. That's like getting into my. I can't open my preseason notepad right now. No, I want to.
I think he's trying to bait us into opening the preseason.
No
notebook.
Debating.
Ask
no
that
debating.
Again for preseason pod. Wolfie, which players would you call it now for game week one squad? How much does their end of season form matter? How much does fatigue or form from the European matches ahead matter?
Wait, what did he say?
Which players would you call out now for a game week one squad?
Call out now, like that you want now?
Yeah,
for game
I think
one?
Shouts for game week one. Okay, saying? And then how much does their end of season form matter? How much does fatigue or form from the European matches ahead matter? It all matters, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is another debating question. What are we? Everyone's trying to debate. Just be patient.
Well, yeah, some game week one guys. I don't even have any. I have none.
CH. Easy.
I have none.
CH.
Okay, let's go further questions. Jack Healy, I overlooked Burnley defense all season. You mentioned the Anfield rap thing about them overperforming defensive stats. Does this matter? Or are Dyche's Burnley going to keep Burnleying and be an auto pick next season?
So one thing, I mean, this could be a little pre-season pod, but Burnley and Palace defense, like...
They're on the preseason notebook.
I mean, we've had like 2-3 years in a row since Roy's been there, Dyche's been there. They clean against the bad teams.
Yes.
And they don't rotate well. You know, they're not like in like, oh, Sunderland, Newcastle, like home away rotation thing in the years past or whatever, but... Those two teams are the most bankable, predictable. They will not clean the top six. Palace, I don't think, did once.
They'll lose all the games, actually.
They'll lose every game. But Palace, like, will have 13 cleans at the end of the season. They're all going to be against, like, the 18 games of, like, the bottom nine or whatever. Like, that's who we clean. So that's a very, very bankable, predictable thing if you're going to be able to rotate the players. Like, yeah, I think that that's something you should definitely not overlook again. And if there's any value, I mean, the Burnley defense this year was ridiculous. They were all like fucking 4-5 and under. Like Peters 4-3, Bardsley 4-4, Taylor finished up 4-3, like Lowton 4-2, like Long 4. Like everyone was under 4 or 5, other than Tarko and me, who were both 5. But that's just where it's just free points. It's actually
it's free real estate.
Yeah, as long as you can rotate, you set your team up to do that. It's the most predictable thing is you want the Burnley and Palace defenders against bad teams. It's just so easy.
Like we said earlier, like usually cleans aren't predictive. Yeah. Those two teams play as conservative and passive as they do against the top teams as they do against the bottom teams. Yeah. So that's why it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
It's a good question. Yep.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about this, but Ozzy said, how can we get better as FPL managers at recognizing our blind spots? Pookie, Ings, Martial, all massive blind spots for me this season. Is there a way of testing yourself so you don't make these kind of misses?
Yeah, I mean, not really. It's really hard to find the blinds. Like, it takes so much time. It also takes, like, constant checking with other people. Like, for me this year, the most important thing I learned is I'm just not going to be touching Leicester again. And it took, like, so much agony for me and, like, talking to you, right, Alon, about I get the defenders. They fucking start – they're awful. I get Vardy. It's awful. Like, they won the year. Like, I never got Mahrez. Like, I got Vardy late. Like, I had defender. Like, it was just – it's every year. I watch them, and I just don't – I don't see it. And that's okay. Like, I don't expect myself – yeah, it's okay. Like, that's something that I just can't – and, like, Braj is another layer of just, like, I have always had a hard time with him as well. And it's okay. Like, I'm gonna just give it a miss. There are 19 other teams, a lot of ways to break a lot of eggs to make a tomlet, for eggs to make a tomlet.
A lot of ways to skin a chicken and then egg of the chicken. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to skin a hard boiled egg, but
you have to have someone to talk to about. Like, you have to be able to self reflect, bounce idea off someone else, and hear their input. Like, you can't do it by yourself.
Yeah, but also I want to reemphasize that it is okay. I mean, at the end of the year, we always see shit like number three in the world had no Liverpool players all season, whatever the fuck. Like, who cares? But also, it's kind of nice to hear because there's so many different routes to have success in this game.
Yeah.
And like, even if Martial is looking really good and scoring a lot of points and you don't have him, it doesn't mean your season's fucked. Like, there's a lot of points to go around. So
maybe you had Bruno and you had Greenwood and you were like, it's fine.
Ricky Chubbs, it seemed like the ideal team structure changed frequently throughout the year. Any reflections on how that might inform next season?
It's a good question. I mean, that's true. That's true.
Not for me, really. I mean, forwards are kind of bad, but we kind of knew that, I think, going in.
But I think it's just like the general idea behind it of, you know, used to be 3-4-3 the whole year. There's no question, right? That's every single game week. Your team is 3-4-3 and it's just picking different players.
Yeah.
You can go like 4-4-2, 4-3-3, 4-5-1. Like, you know, you could do any of that. Like 3-5-2.
I think it's all fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, speaks more to being flexible and not being rigid in, you know, what you expect to do. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul M. Palm, with another season in the books where Trent is near the top of the points leaderboard and three Liverpool defenders in the top 12, is it time to set aside the bias against capping defenders? Should we strongly consider capping Trent in every match where Liverpool look likely to keep it clean?
Oh, God. So this is another one of my preseason notepad notes.
Is
looking at Trent in comparison to the mids. I mean, you know, you have both the mids over 200 points, like noted. But Trent also is over 200 points, and he's like half the price. Trent might be cap. I mean, if Liverpool have a fixture where you want to cap Mo, like you cap Trent, you know, you put that 5 mil elsewhere. You know, that's a big deal. And I do
especially
think
when there's weeks. Sorry to cut you off, but when there's weeks, because sometimes there's weeks where like City have Norwich, and it's like, okay, we want Kun or Raz, and they could score 4, and City might score 7, and it's like, we go for that. We should aggressively go for that if that's how we think the game's going to go. But there's also plenty of weeks where Liverpool have, like, I don't know, Wolves, and City have the tough match, and United have a tough match, and there's not really a clear captain. And, like, yeah, maybe the safe, dependable cap of, like, Mo's never wrong cap, maybe that should be Trent. The avenues are there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got direct freeze. He's got the assist. I got the clean.
Corners, cleans.
I think, yeah. I think Trent should be really, really, like, it's just like we were talking about earlier about viewing how much we spend on defenders. Like, I think Trent is like a really viable every week captaincy option. And I think you can, we're talking about like, okay, Raz and B12, like, Bruno's going to be 10-5. You know, Chelsea are going to have players. And, you know, everyone's Kevin's going to be 12. Like, if you swerve Mane and Mo and you have Trent and you view Trent as your Liverpool captain option when the other teams have tough fixtures, that could be the thing to do. I mean, that could be very fine to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He probably had a comparable number of double-digit hauls. Like, less, but not that many less.
Yeah, not that many less.
Wow, these are really, really long questions. Let me try and skim them.
Yeah, it's like one or two less, about the same.
Yeah. Haffy, here's a pretty deep question. Feel free to ignore it. Not going to ignore it because I think it's something that we always talk about, so it's just kind of like a good point to make. But is learning to deal with luck and accepting that sometimes our decisions were right, but we just got quote-unquote unlucky, something we should be better at handling? In a game with so much fucking variance and randomness, would it be better played if we use our attention to focus on the process and how we make decisions rather than the ultimate outcome? By focusing on the decision process rather than the outcome, we can take away the emotion that comes with it playing FPL, or is the emotional roller coaster part of why we love FPL? I mean, yeah, again, I think we talk about this regularly. I feel like results-based thinking and how it's bad and wrong, and we try and not do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is a very intense question, though, honestly.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm kinda sweating a lot.
Yeah, it makes you kind of think about why you play the game. Like, what are you... To me, anyway, that's what I think is, like, why do I play FPL? What am I looking for? Like, what am I looking to get out of this?
Yeah, yeah.
As you mentioned, like, in the question, it's mentioning, you know, taking out emotion.
But we want
the emotion. I don't play this game to be an automaton or to put, like, numbers in an equation or a spreadsheet to shit out, like, transfer in Joel Matip out of context football.
Yeah, but, no, yeah, the emotion is definitely a big part of it. I mean, we wear our weeks on our sleeves on the pod, right? Like, we wear our green arrows and we wear our red arrows.
Well, I don't agree with that at all, actually. Like, okay. We know how we did that week, but we don't let it affect, like, how we interact with people. We don't run away from Slack Sunday when we didn't well on Saturday.
That's true.
When hundreds of people do that.
Yeah. But I guess I just meant, like, if it's a quote-unquote dark pod or, like, we're just, like, fucking upset with our team or whatever, you know? We show it and we're not afraid to show it.
We're honest. I mean, honest and we it means a lot to us and we put a lot of time into it. And we care a lot about it. Yes, and, you know, we want to do well. And when we don't do well, it doesn't feel great. And that's part of anything. You know, if I was a butcher and I put a lot of time into buying the right fucking cows or whatever, and I bought some shitty ones and the meat was bad, I'd be fucking pissed. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what I'm coming up with.
It just makes me think of Chris Farley and Black Sheep or whatever.
Oh, God. Down
like
by the river.
You get a good look at a T-bone by sticking your head up a cow's ass, but you'd rather take the butcher's word for it.
But, you know, I think it comes down to that, though. Is like, how do you play the game and learn about yourself? Like, for us, right, part of the thing that I love about the game is that there's an infinite amount of variables that we're always juggling.
Yes.
And we try to figure out what's the deciding factor. Like, what's the deciding factor for me to keep this forward and use my transfer on the midfielder? What's the deciding factor that I want to buy two of these defenders instead of one?
Yeah.
We talk about it. Like, we critically think.
We try and reason it out.
Yeah.
And we lean heavily into our biases, kind of consciously.
Yeah. And, like, we know, like, I know if I bring Ozil in game week 8 and he gets an assist, it's going to feel better than if I bring in Mane and he has a hat trick. I know that. And I will make the move because of that. And I'm
maybe
happy
not
with
a
that.
Hat trick.
Okay. But, you know, like, I know, but those are saying. The kind of, those are the kind of, like, I, you know, if you're aware of why you're doing the things you're doing and you're playing the game for the reasons that you distill and you're doing it, then, you know, that's what it's about. And, you know, everyone has there's a different answer for everyone.
Yeah.
And that's what makes the game so fun and so
great.
That
is kind of what makes it fun. And, like, you see it in Slack, right? It's like people who take hits and people who stay the course and people who have, you know, whatever. You see all the variety of playing styles.
Yeah, people who don't come on until Friday. They say five things and then they don't come on until next Friday. And that's
people
it. Like, and that's, you know.
George, who only show up when they're on, you know, 200,000K green or whatever, you know.
Oh, naughty, naughty, naughty.
Get in! Two more questions. Yeah, fine. Up your arsenal. The best keeper strategy is almost always picking the right guy plus Woodman and sticking with him all season.
Excuse me? The best keeper strategy is almost always picking the right guy? When is it not? When is that not? How is that not always? Please. Who asked the question?
Up your arsenal.
Gotta ask him.
At least
need
he got
that.
Woodman in
I
there.
I need that.
He said only swapping while on wild card or if they get injured. Obviously, picking the right guy is much easier said than done. Are there any trends we can look to try and pinpoint the guy at the start of the season? Or is it a crapshoot and not worth the time investigating? Who are we going to have with our keepers next season?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's nothing new here. It's we've been talking about it for the last few years. I think it's like the 4 or 5 guy, you know, team that might get cleans, might get saves. Like, we don't want to spend on keeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Until we do, and then it's horrible, which we'll talk ourselves into at some point, which I think we did last year.
Yeah, I started with Ederson this year.
I actually did start with Pope.
I started with Ederson this year and De Gea last year.
Yeah, I started with Pope this year, and I just sold him. And that was great.
Nice. Ricky Chubbs again, last question. He said, FPL feels like a constant balance of being patient versus aggressive. After this season, I think my approach is to generally be patient, but be aggressive when it has the potential to pay off with hauls. Does that mesh with you? How do you guys think about this balance?
I don't really get it. I think that's what you do for getting transfers, or what are we talking about? Is there something
it's just hard to say. That is the type of thing that a lot of people say, and I think about sometimes, like, yeah, I'm going to be patient, except I'm going to be aggressive at the right moments. But it's like, that means nothing. What does that mean? That means absolute gabagool. It's like, I think what we've talked about a lot in this episode is kind of that balance, where it's like, we're going to try and only use transfers on the guys that deserve transferring, and try and be aggressive for the cap hauls, and try and be patient with, you know, keepers and third, fourth, and fifth defenders, etc. That resonates with me, and I think that's like how I would like to go into next season, but I'm sure I'll fuck it up somehow.
I'm not sure yet. I need to think more about it. I haven't thought that much about that strategy, my transfer strategy.
Yeah, it's a preseason
I've definitely done everything, and I definitely don't know what I'm good at or what I like to do the most.
Oh my God.
That's probably the next couple of weeks for me.
I would love to fireside chat with my, like, 2013-14 self and just be like, what move should I make? And he would just be like, obviously this move, and captain him. And I'm like, okay, cool. Versus now, where I'm like, I'm thinking about that, but, like, I could just go Pookie DCL there, and we're on the pod like, yeah, I'd love that. And I just get them, and it's the worst fucking thing I could possibly do. Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about, or anus slaps, last words, and check us out?
No, I mean, what are we? We didn't go too long.
We didn't go that long. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be really long.
I think last season's was like actually 2 hours.
Oh, really? What did we miss this year that we talked about?
No, it was just 3 times as many questions, honestly.
So we thirded our fan base this year?
Yeah, basically. Well, also, I deleted a lot of questions, honestly, that are like for a preseason pod. Because for the preseason pod.
Yeah, the notes can't get unleashed too early.
Yeah. We can't.
I have so many notes. Dude, that's an actual episode. I'm not joking.
Just notes. So is that going to be our first episode back?
Could be.
It's like the game opens, talk about the game, prices, blah, blah, blah. Let's do the notes.
I want to do it before the game opens, I think.
Before the game opens?
Yeah. Because there are a lot of the notes are predicted. Like, a lot of them are like inquiries of what the price is going to be for some players. So, like, it's like, oh, like, if the player's this, like, then this is the takeaway. But I think it's good to know before the price comes out, because it's like,
how are we gonna schedule
pre-cog.
That?
It's like the pre-cog.
Precognition. And,
Minority Report.
Minority Report. That should be the art for the first episode. We should both full shave bald. Our heads. Complete bald and just lying down in
our bathtubs. With the marble,
the images splashing above, the prices and transferring.
Yeah, the marble comes down.
It's like, oh, we're killing late riser. Oh, God. Free cock.
Oh, God.
Amazing. That's good shit. So we'll try and figure out the timing of that. We have to guess when the game is going to open up and then basically pod the week before that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're up for it.
No, I think it would be a good one because it's like my pre-priced thoughts.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That's cool.
Yeah, and it would be more of we could talk more about it theoretically.
It's more objective. And then when the prices come out, we have something to reflect on.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. So we'll do that in maybe a month or 2 weeks. Probably 2 weeks.
Next week. Check us out.
So two anus slaps. Last two anus slaps of the season. Malte Wanner Skog, 54th in the world. Get in there, Malte. And then Adam Dalton. Dude, Malte, I'm usually pretty bad with the pronunciations, but Malte said that I nailed his name. So, listen. Good job by me. And I think that's it, dude. Any last words?
No, it was a good season, dude. Good year. What is this, our fourth year, fifth year, sixth year?
I have no idea. It's our 251st episode, so that's a lot of potting.
A lot of years.
We've potted for, if it averages an hour, that's a fucking lot of potting.
I think this is our fifth year. So yeah, next year's our sixth year.
Wow, that's crazy. Never stayed at a club that long. All right. Check us out at fmlvl.com. Follow us on Twitter at fmlvl. Support us at patreon.com/fmlvl. Subscribe, rate, review, cheer!